listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio. This is In Black America.
Well, back in 2017, I had a business partner out of Los Angeles there. We were putting this idea together of actually African Americans owning their own television network. We looked out there in the play field there, pretty much knowing there was only BET, and there was at that point TV One. It's only two people in the game that actually were relevant. So I'm thinking in my mind, how could this be more expanded, where we don't have the big box companies controlling what we see in our content and things of that nature? So fast forward to 2020, partner and I, we decided to sit down and see if we go after some streaming type of apps or OTT types of networks that are out there that will allow us to put our content out, not through traditional cable, but through the streaming process. And at that time, it was at the curve, right at the beginning of where things are now today. Everybody's streaming.
Jerry Adam, president and CEO of VTV. Adam has joined forces with award-winning music pioneer Ben Tankard. Tankard is a platinum-selling Billboard chart-topping artist known as the godfather of gospel jazz, who is also an author, pilot, pastor, and NBA motivational speaker. Adams has extensive experience in media markets, promotion, and production. The collaboration is a joint venture between their new streaming networks, Smooth Life TV and VTV. The Tankin and Adams joint venture represent continual economic growth for the entertainment industry and investment by African-American-owned media suppliers. VTV is an American-based international streaming service targeting African-American audiences. Smooth Life TV Network is a streaming service that will showcase relaxing music, movies, and unique programming, targeting mindset and money matters. I'm Johnny O. Hansen, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Smooth Life TV and VTV with Jerry Adams and Ben Tankard, In Black America.
We met through a good friend of many years, Broderick, who worked with the gospel music industry as a consultant, promoter, and, you know, and so we kind of connected through a longstanding gospel relationships. And Jerry and I, we just kind of met and connected, and he had already been doing the TV thing for some time. And I just launched my app and I said, you know, something, two are better than one. Let's do this thing together. I've got a bigger name, but I know nothing. And you know everything, and people don't know you. People, and not as many people know as you yet. So let's just merge us up, and 1 + 1 = 3.
Ben Tankard, legendary artist and music mogul. Tankard's resume includes 15 gold and 6 platinum-selling albums, multiple number one Billboard smooth jazz radio singles, 17 Stellar Awards, and a Stellar Music Hall of Fame induction. He's an author, a reality TV dad, pilot, NBA motivational speaker, and pastor. One would think with all this going on, where he would find the time for something else. Well, he has. Tankard has partnered with Jerry Adams, president and CEO of VTV. The collaboration will bring together two streaming services, VTV and Smooth Life TV. This partnership will bring new voices and reshape the landscape of ownership and representation by African Americans in media. The joint venture represents continued economic growth for the entertainment industry and investments by African American owned media suppliers. Recently in Black America spoke with Jerry Adams and Ben Tankard.
The most important thing today is that I'm your fifth cousin twice removed through marriage in Jesus. But there are several ways that people could possibly know Ben Tankard. Some people remember me from my short NBA days back in the 80s as a shooting guard for the Portland Trailblazers. Might not have seen me because I was on the bench. That didn't last long. I got injured and cut and got into music. So many people may have heard me through my music as a producer with Yolanda Adams and my own music as a gospel jazz recording artist. And then most recently, people might have heard about me through my family reality TV show, Thicker Than Water, The Tankard, which started out on the Bravo Network and is now on the Smooth Life TV Network, which is what brought me to collaborate with my friend Jerry Adams and what we're talking about today, the TV world.
Mr. Adams, tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I'm out of the city of Chicago originally, and I'm housed here in Atlanta now. I was a former general manager of Worldwide Gospel right there in Texas. We had artists like Keith Wonderboy, Evelyn Tarantine, A.G., and we've done work with Damon Little and various ones. I'm now the CEO and president of the VTV Television Network. However, I've done various different projects with the Stellar Awards in terms of management with events and post and pre-events, and also some of the planning. I do and sit on several boards around the country with certain entertainment entities. And I'm here in Atlanta, and I work with some of the wonderful, wonderful people that are in entertainment right now. And that's people like with the C Room and places like that, gospel and entertainment. So that's basically my rundown. It's a lot of things that we've done.
So how did you guys get together?
We met through a good friend of many years, Broderick, who worked with the gospel music industry as a consultant promoter, and so we kind of connected through longstanding gospel relationships. And Jerry and I, we just kind of met and connected, and he had already been doing the TV thing for some time, and I just launched my app, and I said, you know something, two are better than one. Let's do this thing together. I've got a bigger name, but I know nothing. And you know everything, and people don't know you. People, and not as many people know as you yet. So let's just merge us up, and 1 + 1 = 3.
Come on,
Jerry. How did you form VTV? How did that project come to fruition?
Well, back in 2017, I had a business partner out of Los Angeles. There, we were putting this idea together of actually African Americans owning their own television network. We looked out there in the play field there, pretty much knowing there was only BET, and there was at that point TV One. It's only two people in the game that actually was relevant. So I'm thinking in my mind, how could this be more expanded, where we don't have the big box companies controlling what we see in our content and things of that nature? So fast forward to 2020, partner and I, we decided to sit down and see if we go after some streaming type of apps or OTT types of networks that are out there that will allow us to put our content out, not through traditional cable, but through the streaming process. And at that time, it was at the curve, right at the beginning of where things are now today. Everybody's streaming, but very few people was even thinking along that wise. So we were able to acquire a company that was able, some app developers out of Texas right there, that actually was able to give us the opportunity. We shelled out the money to get it done, but the actual structure of it was basically keeping it where it speaks to our community, not excluding other communities, but it speaks primarily to our community and what we wanted to see and talking to our base. And that is what was the driving force with me. Of course, we had to, have to get people on board. You had to get tech people involved, marketing people involved, production. And we all know content is king. So I had to go out to the right content providers. So that's how I landed here at VTV Network.
How does that process work? I'm talking about the streaming process. Okay, you have a product, and to get that product from point A to point B, and I guess point B is in someone's home. So talk to us through that process.
Oh, well, what happens is if your listeners, probably all of them, probably 80% of them or 50%, I'll go as high as that, have a Roku television. We saw Roku over at Walmart. We saw Roku over at Best Buy. They have those Hisense televisions and things of that nature. But we were not in that arena. We weren't in that space. So how do we get a content provider content to a platform large like that? And by us developing what we developed, we were able to provide them. So how that works is that they're going to provide their content to VTV or Smooth Life TV, and we have people that would vet that product, and then we'll say if it fits our format or our agenda, if you will, and then we make that decision. And once that happens, within our individual networks, we have the capability of actually uploading that content into our system. And what that is that by being a streaming platform, that's where it's all going now. Streaming can get you into more homes and faster and at a cheaper rate. So that's merely the way that they make it happen. You get it first become attractive to the network itself. In our case, Smooth Life TV, it's entertainment based. It's instrumental. It's the festivals. It's all that great stuff. And then with my network, the BTV Television Network, we don't have so much of it, the live portion of it, but we do a lot of scripted content, short film, things of that nature, and talk shows. So if it appeals to either one of our networks, this is how we make the determination of as to how to put that content on our platforms. But the great thing about this is that streaming is so huge right now. We're over into Apple TV. We're over into Android television and phones. We're over into smart TVs now, the Hisense and Vita. It's just the list goes on and on. So they saw that now it is getting more of the profit share. It's getting more of more eyeballs on the fact that, for lack of a better word, on the streaming portion at a less cost versus the cable that we've seen out there with Xfinity, Comcast, and things like that. We're charging an arm and a leg, and you're not getting as much for that. So now the trajectory of the whole game has changed. It's now the streaming portion where you're paying $50 a month. You get all these apps that you would never probably see in your whole life. You get them all there at your disposal. But we can do way more things with it for less than money. So I hope I'm answering your question, but I think this is the wave of the future. I think that this is where we're going. I think that we as African Americans as well, I don't know all the way your demo, your base, but I want to speak to that community. We can actually do it. We can take it from a conception to completion. It can become an idea. It can actually get out there in people's homes and on their phones. So I think we have the bull by the horn, if you will, Smooth Life TV, as well as VTV Network. We have the doorway to that. And I think with us collaborating, my friend Ben and I, it's just going to open more and more doors, giving people more opportunities. It's going to spread the whole thing out much better across the world right now.
I understand. So, Ben, when did you and Jules decide that you want to be a mogul in television? Of course, you were smitten by Thicker Than Water, the Tankers. So mm-hmm. Now you all wanted to go out on your own and be your own boss and produce your own content. So when did you all come up with that idea?
Well, that's a great question, man. This isn't my first rodeo of waking up and smelling the coffee, because mm-hmm. you know, you and I have talked about this over the years. You know, I was with Sony Verity Records for 16 years. And so everybody knows, well, not everybody knows, just a little short lesson in being a recording artist and getting royalties. Basically, you know, the record company signs you and, you know, they put up the money and they promote the record. And if you're lucky, they will pay you a dollar for every copy that you sell. So let's just say you have a great year in gospel, which is 100,000 sales. Well, that's $100,000. That they would give you. But what happened to the other nine? because when you go on Amazon and iTunes, which is basically how people buy these days, that $9, that $10, that entity, Amazon or iTunes, they take out their cut for distributing it, which is $3, and then they send that $7 to the record company. In my case, it was Sony. So Sony would give me a dollar, and they would keep six. And so if I sold 100,000 copies, I get $100,000, but doggone it, they get $500,000, $600,000. Mm-hmm. So when I found that, wow. When I figured out that arithmetic, I said, wait a minute now, I can be the label. Mm-hmm. And so when I left them after, many years, 16 years, I opened up Ben Jammin', and I gave all that money to your cousin, Sister Tanker. we kept it in the family. So when we went to Bravo and Bravo did our three seasons of Thicker Than Water, and we realized that we had 3 million fans following us on Sunday night, things begin to turn when I found out that very few people are sitting down at the dinner table watching TV at the same time. When we got the ratings and stuff from Bravo, they would say most of your viewers is people that are going on their own schedule and pulling down the show and watching it video on demand or on their cell phone or on their iPad or in their offices on TV. And so when I found that out, I said, shoot, I'm going to do the same thing with TV that I did with music.
Right.
And that's how we opened up our own production company. And this last season of Thicker Than Water was not on Bravo. It was on Tubi, the Fox Network, which was the app that we was able to use to get the word out. Then I met Jerry, and I said, not only am I going to do this with Thicker Than Water, but I'm going to do this with anybody that can bring me content that we can have an agreement on. And let's open this up for other people that have an opportunity to get their music and their TV out, their live concerts. And so I'm like, Jerry has the information. I got some of the know-how. Let's put our 2 cents together and make it and do like Byron Allen and Tyler Perry are doing and joint effort. And let's make this name rock. So that's how I got into this mix.
Now, you talk about content. Obviously, if you're on 24 hours a day, you need a buttload of content. So where you are obtaining this content from?
Different sources. You know, I kind of threw a wide net out and said, the British is coming. We're opening the door. What you got? And so people began to send us clips of stuff that they're working on. We've already signed a lady over in Indiana that she's a pastor's wife, but she works out, and so she has a workout show that she's put together that's already in the can. And so at least from my side of the tracks, we're interested in people that have content that's already finished. All we have to do is put a label on it and play it. We're not into investing money in ideas. We're taking ideas that have already moved past the kitchen table into the studio, and we cut it up into 29-minute segments and air it right now. That's what I'm looking for. But Jerry can kind of tell you what's going on.
Jerry, go ahead. How do you all obtain content for VTV?
Well, typically the same way that Brother Ben just mentioned. We want already packaged content, and we go after those types of content creators at movie festivals and things of that nature, you know, and at different outlets. People submit the content already created, preferably, definitely. There's only maybe one or two pieces on our network that we are investing in terms of our production team. But the majority of that is just like Mr. Ben said, you have to have this content come in already created, and it's just better to stick a sticker on it and put it through the system. And
when you look at it, that's what when you look at it, that's what the Netflix and Amazon Prime
licensing game. Yeah,
that's what they were doing. Only they were taking content from major studios. They were Warner Brothers,
and
they would take shows that have already been done that we watched on TV, and they were just replaying it on their networks. Mm-hmm. And then when they make enough money, they can say, "All right, here is a Hulu original." Or
Netflix original.
And so the smooth life originals ain't kicked in yet because we're still raising the money.
Absolutely, but that's the format. He just gave you the formula. That's basically it. That's what we're doing.
You're listening to In Black America with Johnny O. Henson Jr. We'll be back with more of our conversation in just a moment. If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny O. Henson Jr., and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio, and we're speaking with Ben Tankard, media mogul, also Jerry Adams, president and CEO of VTV. Gentlemen, why is it important for gentlemen such as yourself and ladies to do what you all are doing? Why is it important for us to tell our own stories, to be our own deliverer of information and entertainment?
Everyone has a voice, and history is his story. Everybody has a story, and who better to tell our stories than ourselves, than to have a perception through somebody else's lens, which might be the lens of bias, the lens of racism, the lens of jealousy. Who better to tell our own stories than ourselves and our people?
Jerry?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I concur with Ben. I think for me, in looking at how we as African Americans, I'm going to speak to that community right now, have been kind of noted as not being able to work together, or that type of thing, or some negative type of a cloud over our business operations. I wanted to dispel that. I want to show the world in this case that two African American owned companies and independently operated can work together in harmony, okay, without the compromise of quality and content. So I think that is the substratum of where I think we were kind of coming from in our hearts. We want to display that thing, and that's why you saw us in that picture. Some of you guys may have seen the press release with us holding hands or shaking hands, and we're saying the unity. We're unified. We're not fighting, and we're not backbiting, and we're not trying to outdo anything. Of course, it's a business, but at the same time, we can be all of that separately, and we can be all of that together. That's the message I think that needs to be conveyed throughout our community.
What kind of financial commitment that you all had to make to each other to get this venture off the ground?
Well, we I'm going to be totally transparent. We still trying to figure it out.
Right. That part
I got two pieces of bread and Jerry got some bologna. We about to make a sandwich.
We got to make a sandwich. Come on, Doc. I like that. Yes. That's it. That's the concept.
And, you know, this thing started out as just a dream on the kitchen table, and it's developing, and it's growing legs. And I believe, here's the preacher hat. Mm-hmm. I believe when Moses got backed up to the Red Sea, and the enemy was on one side about to catch them, Pharaoh's army, and then you had this sea of questions. You had this sea of unbelief, not sure what was going to happen on the other side. They had no idea that God was going to part the Red Sea. But I believe this is the Benjamin translation. I believe that they actually had to get in the water and get their toes wet before God parted the Red Sea.
Now, Ben, I wanted to ask, how is this going to cut into your music making, or if at all?
Oh, actually, it's going to even enhance it because...
Talk to me.
Because every Sunday will be Jazz Sunday. Mm. So we've already put the word out to the Gerald Albrights, the Will Downings, the Take Sixes, and said, send us your concert footage, and we will play it on our network on Sunday. So people will start tuning in just to see their favorite jazz artist, and then they'll fall in love with some of the other content that we have on demand on the networks.
Jerry, will that also translate to some of the gospel artists that you've managed or concerts that you have helped promote prior to your VTV?
Yes, it'll have the same effect. I think what ultimately happens is that we want to be seen. Everything visual is everything. Visual is king. And with us having our own platforms across the world, now I think it's 176 countries, I don't know how many continents it reaches, but it will enhance what we're doing here. I'm able to offer different things. I'm able to have some educational portions of things, just basically inspiring our people and educating our people about the industry that we're in, which happens to be entertainment. But yes, this will do just the same thing that Brother Ben was just saying. It will enhance it. It will give us more of an opportunity to reach more people. So I think that's
what I found out when I left Sony. There was a little fear there, Brother Jerry and John. There was some fear because, you know, I'm used to hiding behind that name of Sony and using that as my resume. And so now I'm going out on my own. There was a little fear when I first stepped out. But then I found out from my fans, once you have a fan base, they don't care who I'm signed to. They will follow me wherever I want it to go.
Right.
So good content is good content. They don't care if it's on Warner Brothers, on Netflix. If it's good content, they will follow you. So I'm excited about this opportunity because I believe those names that we are able to capture, those people in the gospel and the jazz and actors and artists, if the content is good, their fan base will follow them, even if they have not heard about a BTV or a Smooth Life TV. Your fan base will follow you wherever you go. They don't care about the name of the label. They only care about the content.
Absolutely.
Because when something goes viral on YouTube, nobody checks the origin of it. When they watch it on TikTok or YouTube, all they get
right.
to laugh. They're not, I'm not sure if I'm going to watch this. Where did that come from? Who are they signed to?
No,
they only at what they're looking at, you know?
Absolutely.
Now, the project is in its infancy. Where do you all see this effort 2 to 5 years from now? Jerry, you go first.
Well, I see this being a multi-million dollar collaboration. I just see that in my mind over the next 5 years. I think closer than that, I think in the next 2 years or so, I think you're going to see a significant impact on what streaming television can do. Okay, it can really change the trajectory of the actual playing field because I think with us having the influence of television, which ain't going nowhere, people want to visually see something. And it also inspires, it trickles down to inspiring people to say, hey, if they did it, I can do it. If that type of movement that's going, I think it's going to go there in the next 5 years. We're looking at easily $100 to $200 million business. I mean, I can see it generate that kind of business.
I agree. And if we remember, if you remember, this is just a few years ago when people had to wait till they got home to check their voicemail.
Oh, come on.
They had to wait till they come home or wait till they got home to put on the VCR.
Mm-hmm.
Now everything's changed. You can be sitting up at the bus stop, pull your phone out, and watch your favorite show. And
look
so
out.
Where before you had to, I got to get home, my program's coming on, my story coming on. Now just pull out your phone, and you can be sitting on your iPhone, you sit on your app seat in your car. And so I believe because of that change, it opens up a whole opportunity for us to get involved on the early stage, you know, because if we would have been able to put in $100 into Amazon when we first heard about it or the Walmart. So I feel like we're doing that with TV right now.
Yes.
And in 5 years, man, we're going to be buying major studios. I might have to retire you, John, man. I love the school, but y'all going to let John go. You come work with us.
Ben Tankard, legendary recording artist. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at inblackamerica@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Also, you can listen to a special collection of In Black America programs at American Archive of Public Broadcasting. That's AmericanArchives.org. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.
Hey, y'all, what's up? It's Friday, so I'm going to keep it black. But I'm going to keep it brief. So another black person was senselessly murdered. Trump has finally been indicted, and I don't want to talk about any of it. I am certain another creator has y'all covered on that front, and today, I just want to get somebody their flowers. Mr. Tyler James Williams. We love you, black man. Ever since y'all kept calling him the boy from Everybody Hates Chris, like he ain't never worked on another set in a day of his life. He been the man and y'all put some respect on his name, purely through his sheer talent and award-worthy performance on Abbott Elementary. And we've been seeing him outside a lot more lately, and he been putting that shit on. But y'all decided to resume the disrespect and call him gay because of the way he dresses and presents himself. And here's the thing. Gay isn't the insult. However, the way y'all are harping on his softer aesthetic, pointing out what you consider to be feminine traits, and using shame as a vehicle to challenge his masculinity and speculate on his sexuality is weird and problematic. And boy, did he let y'all have it. Bring in the roses! Instead of telling y'all to mind the business that pay you, he responded with sense. He said, I'm not gay, but I think the culture of trying to find some kind of hidden trait or behavior that a closeted person lets slip is very dangerous. Overanalyzing someone's behavior in an attempt to catch him directly contributes to the anxiety a lot of queer and queer questioning people feel when they fear living in their truth. And I don't know what's been chewing on y'all, but I know y'all ate up. Gather the people so eloquently, they was in the comments like it was an Inspector Gadget's Anonymous. Talking about, I too used to look at men and try to get the gotcha before the gotcha got me. Girl! This frame of mind also emphasizes something my friend Obio said to me the other day. Listen to our podcast. Y'all think gay is a behavior. Goodness gracious. And really what you're sussing out is femininity, which doesn't necessarily inform somebody's sexuality. Sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression are all different. And yes, I know it can get a little confusing for us straights, but taking the time to understand those differences can reduce the danger that Tyler was talking about, and we'll get right back to that in just a second. The Human Rights Campaign defines sexual orientation as an inherent romantic or sexual attraction to other people. Gender identity refers to one's inner concept of self as male, female, a blend of both, or neither. How individuals perceive themselves and what they call themselves regardless of what their bits and parts talking about. And gender expression, stay with me now, is the external appearance of one's gender identity, usually expressed through behavior, clothing, body characteristics, or voice, and may or may not fit into the box of masculinity or femininity that you think it should. And that's that on that. Now, what was so beautiful about Tyler's PSA was that instead of jumping into defense mode, he immediately used the moment to be an ally. Not for show, but for real. And besides Dwayne Wade, we don't see very many public-facing straight black men going to bat for black queer folk. And Tyler's not new to this. He's true to this. His two younger brothers came after him years ago, and you know what he did? He started reading books.
What?
The man wanted to educate himself to be a better big brother. His brother Tyrell said not only did he start reading Bell Hooks, but also recommended that they all read it together so they could all learn together. That's a good man, Savannah. He completely deconstructed his views on what masculinity looks like so he could be there for them unconditionally. And that's the thing. Y'all want so bad for somebody to be found out, pushed out of the closet, and into isolation and vulnerability, all for what? So you can be like, gotcha, bitch.
What?
And this is the danger he was getting at. This femphobia, also strangely tied to Eurocentric gender roles black people were never designed to uphold in the first place, is also tied to DL culture. And I think we can all agree that DL culture is harmful as it's a threat to everybody's sexual health, especially in the Bible Belt. The South alone takes up 51% of new cases of HIV every year, and black, gay, bisexual, and other men who have sex with men account for 6 out of every 10 of these new cases. That's nearly twice that of white and Hispanic or Latino men who have sex with men, and black women account for nearly 67% of them down here. Now, HIV is not the only risk factor implied here, but the reason DL culture persists in the harmful way that it does is because conversations that surround closeted black K culture are nestled in shame and not in compassion. Just listen to If Only for One Night from the perspective of Luther being a closeted man. Bet money you'll never hear it the same again. And Tyler, the class act that he is, goes on to say that speculating on sexuality makes the most pedestrian of conversations and interactions and spaces feel less safe for our gay brothers and sisters and those who may be queer questioning. These folks might not never feel safe or supported coming out because y'all make it feel like such a hostile environment. And on top of that, just 2 days ago, the HRC declared a state of emergency for the first time in their history due to the more than 75 anti-LGBTQ+ laws that have passed this year alone, which include gender-affirming care bans, bathroom bans, sports participation bans, LGBTQ erasure laws, pronoun refusals, and all of that. The UCLA School of Law Williams Institute reported last year that LGBTQers are 9 times more likely than non-LGBTQers to be victims of violent hate crimes. And even if queer folks weren't being targeted physically and politically, I absolutely refuse to let y'all forget about the social stigma that comes along with being outed. Because the shame don't stop at aha. It in fact contributes to the high rates of suicide within the LGBTQ community. So maybe think twice about studying the way somebody crossed their legs or the lay of their blouse before fixing your fingers and starts a mess. I don't know, maybe get outside and touch some grass.
If this indictment is true, if what it says is actually the case, President Trump was incredibly reckless with our national security. More than that, I'm a military spouse. My husband's about to deploy this weekend. This puts all of our military men and women in danger. If you are going to talk about what our military is capable of or how we would go about invading or doing something with one of our enemies.
Welcome back to America Decides. That was GOP presidential candidate Nikki Haley criticizing former President Trump's indictment. Other GOP candidates on the campaign trail are also weighing in. CBS News senior White House and political correspondent Ed O'Keefe joins me now. And Ed, just want to get your thoughts on Haley's characterization that she thinks the former president was reckless.
She seems to be going there now and being far more critical and outspoken in her concerns about this, pointing out, as we've known for a few weeks, that her husband is indeed deploying this weekend with the South Carolina National Guard, but trying to put herself at distance from him now that the content of the accusations is out there. We should point out, however, before she says that in that interview, she does what just about every other Republican presidential candidate has done in recent days, and that is either revive or start their own criticisms about how the Justice Department and the FBI writ large have been investigating the former president.
What do you think is the strategy behind that?
The Republican base simply thinks that they're being unfair to the former president and that they have aggressively targeted the Republican frontrunner, former president, more so than President Biden or Hillary Clinton, as you just heard in your conversation with Congresswoman Mace. That speaks to a real concern that a lot of base voters have about it. That said, to hear her, Nikki Haley, go out there and now say, if it's true, it's quite serious and we should be concerned about it. To hear Tim Scott earlier today in a quick conversation with reporters at an event he held in South Carolina say something very similar is a sign that a bunch of these candidates who, let's face it, are far further down in the rankings than the former president right now, realize that one way to get ahead potentially is to put distance between them and these accusations against
them. How does that square with other candidates, though, like Florida Governor Ron DeSantis?
He has also suggested that there's been a, quote, weaponization, unquote, of the Justice Department, a pretty aggressive characterization of where he thinks things are at. Has not weighed in as much on the specific charges, and I suspect he's going to get asked about it again at some point soon, and we'll see how he responds. But, you know, there are those like DeSantis who are trying to hug as close to, if not the former president himself, then to his policies, his style, and his base of support, then other candidates who perhaps are making a play for the more traditional Republican voter. That would certainly be Nikki Haley and Tim Scott. And they understand that there's a big segment of the party, or people who at least have associated with it in the past, who believe that what they're seeing here in this indictment is pretty serious.
And what about President Biden and Democrats and their reaction? I mean, I know the president has been reticent to weigh in on this, but given what you just said in terms of the characterization of the Justice Department, I mean, how can he keep his distance without looking like his Justice Department is involved? I mean, how does he straddle that line?
Keep his head down and keep away from anything that would suggest he's involved or monitoring it in any way. Refused to say last Friday when he was at, Thursday at two different events when the, it was Friday, sorry. He was asked twice during stops in North Carolina whether he had any comment on it, whether he talked to the attorney general. He said no comment. Today in the briefing.
But is that enough?
Well, no, I we don't know. But what they have said since day one, what he said as a candidate was, I'm not going to weigh in on specific cases at the Justice Department. I'm not going to do anything that would suggest politicization of federal prosecutions. And so he's avoided bringing it up himself. When asked, we'll see how he comments. But even today at the briefing, they wouldn't say whether he's read the indictment at the suggestion of the special counsel, Jack Smith, who has told all Americans they should read the indictment for themselves.
And do you think those concerns will stand out more if Biden ends up opposing someone other than Trump?
We'll see. You know, who is it and how aggressively do they potentially raise the issue of, as they call it, the weaponization or the politicization of the Justice Department and the FBI? Remember, DeSantis and others have said that FBI's top leadership has to be cleaned out. In her statements today, Haley was suggesting that the entire federal justice system has to be reconsidered. I mean, those are pretty aggressive stances to take, but it speaks to the anger that a lot of voters, or at least the skepticism that a lot of Americans have about how the Justice Department and the FBI are being run.
All right. Ed O'Keefe, thank you so much for joining us as always. And of course, we will see you tomorrow evening when Ed actually anchors America Decides. He will be right here for you.
Donald Trump's got to be a show up for an arraignment in Miami. Lord, his supporters, they are pissed off, all upset, mad, angry, saying that this is it. They're going to take up arms for their guy. Okay, you can try that bullshit if you want to. You're going to end up like them fools on January 6th, like one of these fools who said that, now it was a mistake that he actually hit a police officer. He's now facing 14 years in prison. Guess what? You're about to go to jail. So y'all going to act a fool if you want to, but I'm telling you how it's going to end up. if you try to act a fool, because they're gonna be waiting to jack you. And they should, because y'all are crazy. Now, over the weekend, it was a number of folks out there on, talking about this particular story. I have gotten some of the greatest laughs watching some of these fools do all they can to defend Donald Trump. Now, one of the ones that really got me going was Jim Jordan. Over the weekend, he was on CNN with Dana Bash. And y'all should have heard this man with all of the mental gymnastics trying to explain why Trump was fine, why everything was good. Okay, y'all want a good laugh? Watch this. This is the best of Comedy Central.
Commander-in-Chief, the President of the United States has the ability to classify and control access to information. That's what the Constitution and the court have said. So you can't obstruct when there's not the underlying crime.
That
is the fundamental flaw.
He says point blank on tape, as president, I could have declassified it. Now I can't. He says in his own words, it's on tape as part of this indictment, he did not declassify the material. Therefore, it is classified.
Dana, saying he could have is not the same as saying he didn't.
He said now he can't.
He has declassified this material. He said that meant now he can't, right, because he's not president now, but when he was
president, he did declassify.
He said that.
Which means what he was holding was classified.
No, not if he declassified it when he was president of the United States, for goodness sake.
But he's saying point blank in this audio tape that he did not declassify it. What you're saying just doesn't make sense on its face.
This is what this truly is, Dana, is an affront to the rule of law. It's an affront to consistent application of the law. You had Secretary Clinton, who had classified material on a server. She was not president of the United States. She was Secretary Clinton. You have that happen. Nothing happens to her. When you have two people who do the same thing, and one has the standard that I've talked about, but the only one who gets indicted is the Republican. The only one who gets indicted is the one who was actually president, who did it the right way. Oh, my goodness. That is what the American people see. And the other...
Really? That was it? It's cute how they love trying to bring up Clinton, trying to bring up President Joe Biden, trying to say, oh, they had documents. See, here's the difference. They gave them back. There was a subpoena. They literally have the notes of Donald Trump's own attorney who admits that he was trying to hide them. See, it's a little hard to sit here and dance around that. And they have worked themselves up into a lather. I mean they're really upset. But they're really ticked off because not everybody who has been in Trump's orbit actually agrees with it because... Well, there's another guy who was the attorney general for Donald Trump, Bill Barr, who covered his ass on a whole bunch of stuff. Well, he went on Fox News on Sunday and was like, yeah, they got his ass.
Chief argument that comes up for the president's allies and his legal team that this should have been handled under the Presidential Records Act, not this Espionage Act charge and other federal statutes that were used here.
Well, it started out under the Presidential Records Act and the archives trying to retrieve documents that Trump had no right to have. But it quickly became clear that what the government was really worried about were these classified and very sensitive documents. I was shocked by the degree of sensitivity of these documents and how many there were, frankly. And so the government's agenda was to get those, protect those documents and get them out. And I think it was perfectly appropriate to do that. It was the right thing to do. And I think the counts under the Espionage Act that he willfully retained those documents are solid counts. Now, I do think we have to wait and see what the defense says and what proves to be true. But I do think that even half of what Andy McCarthy said, which is if even half of it is true, then he's toast. I mean, it's a very detailed indictment. And it's very, very damning. And this idea of presenting Trump as a victim here, a victim of a witch hunt, is ridiculous. Yes, he's been a victim in the past. Yes, his adversaries have obsessively pursued him with phony claims. And I've been at his side defending against them when he is a victim. But this is much different. He's not a victim here. He was totally wrong that he had the right to have those documents. Those documents are among the most sensitive secrets that the country has. They have to be in the custody of the archivist. He had no right to maintain them and retain them. And he kept them in a way at Mar-a-Lago that anyone who really cares about national security, their stomach would churn at it.
If anybody cares about national security, Lord, the folk on the right, y'all, are just beside themselves. They have been acting a plumb fool, angry and upset. But the thing that's so crazy, they're literally defending stupidity. They are so desperate to kiss this man's ass that they will knowingly defend BS. He was wrong. 100%, without a doubt, flat out wrong. And he ignored the subpoena. He ignored the... And they said, dog, we ain't coming after you. Just give us the papers back. His own attorney recorded notes where he said, I don't want you going through my boxes. My pal, Dr. Julianne Malvo, she's the Dean, College of Ethnic Studies, California State University, Los Angeles. Dr. Amakongo Dabinga, Senior, Professorial Lecturer, School of International Service, American University, out of D.C. And Renita Shannon, former Georgia State Representative, out of Atlanta. I think all of this is utterly hilarious, Amakongo, because the Republicans are embarrassing themselves. They're embarrassing themselves defending a known liar, a man who ignored the directives of his own attorney, who wanted them to engage in his lies. They were like, say, dog, I ain't giving up my damn law license for your ass. They got the goods on them. But yeah, they want to keep playing games.
I think that you use the right term in terms of a game, because this is a game. I think that those who are running for president, they are hoping that in some way, shape, or form, this takes Donald Trump out, and they are either auditioning to be his number two if it doesn't take him out, or they are fighting to get his base. They want his base of support if for some reason he's removed from the picture. But they are really playing a dangerous game, because their rhetoric that they're putting out there can lead to even more dangerous things happening. We saw January 6th, we saw FBI offices getting targeted. And even now, the FBI is saying that there's no real chat about something major happening in Miami tomorrow, but there could be lone wolves out there who take this stuff seriously. And so these guys are being extremely dangerous. And not only the candidates, when you have some of these congressmen, when you have people like Carrie Lake, who lost in Arizona, talking about this is my public service announcement that we all got guns, so you better be careful. I believe, Roland, at the end of the day, that some of these guys are unhinged enough that they actually want war. They've used the term war. They've used military terminology. And some people are like, oh, they're just trying to act big and tough. They actually want this. They want dissension. They want destruction, because they thrive in it. And these candidates, Tim Scott and the others, you know, Nikki Haley tried to clean it up a little bit over the weekend because her husband's in the military. But here's the last thing I'll say, Roland. These guys who are defending Trump like this, they don't know everything that's going to come out that Jack Smith and Merrick Garland have. So there's going to be deeper things that are going to come out. And I just want to see how far they're going to take their defense, because we still do not yet know what Trump actually did with the documents. We know people took photos and all of this other things and where they were stored. But where did they, who came in, took pictures, and what did they do with them? Did Donald Trump sell them? Is this how Jared Kushner got that multi-billion or million-dollar deal with Saudi Arabia? When that stuff comes out, it's going to be very interesting to see how they still try to twist themselves into pretzels like they're at my yoga studio or something, trying to defend this.
Here's Nikki Haley trying to, as you said, distance herself from this. Watch.
When I was at the UN, I mean, I saw that the president never got an ounce of credit or a moment's peace. I also had to deal with the Russiagate, because that's what they were swirling around all the time, and we saw that that was not a fact. This is what I'll tell you. Two things can be true at the same time. One, the DOJ and FBI have lost all credibility with the American people. And getting rid of just senior management isn't going to be enough to fix this. This is going to take a complete overhaul, and we have to do that. Two, The second thing can also be true. If this indictment is true, if what it says is actually the case, President Trump was incredibly reckless with our national security. More than that, I'm a military spouse. My husband's about to deploy this weekend. This puts all of our military men and women in danger. If you are going to talk about what our military is capable of or how we would go about invading or doing something.
Bottom line is they know this fool is wrong, so they're trying to soften a blow. Just have some guts and speak truth.
Absolutely. And when you read that indictment of what Trump has been charged with, it's just absolutely egregious. Nobody who cares about national security can look at that and say that what he did was okay. And it's just so egregious because even his attorney talks about how he tried to stop him from breaking the law and the lengths that he went to go around his attorney to make sure that he could break the law. And so I'm glad that Bill Barr, you know, Bill Barr doesn't get any credit, but I'm glad that for once he finally admitted that what Trump did was completely wrong and it is completely dangerous for this country. And so all this is very interesting to me. Republicans are always proclaiming to be the real patriots, but here we see that they are completely fine with a former president putting all of us at risk, not only the United States, but also our allies at risk. And so Trump has done irreparable damage to the country.
Now, this to me is, if you want to see just absolutely embarrassing, Julianne, is listening to Tim Scott and Harris Faulkner on Fox News. Now, this is just utterly pitiful. Listen to this nonsense.
Turn now to Senator Tim Scott. He is running in the Republican field for the nomination of the Republican Party for the White House against Donald Trump. Senator, it's an awkward position to be in, but the bottom line is you're a Republican. This was a Republican president, and look at what has happened. Your reaction.
Well, Harris, more importantly, I'm an American, and let's look at what's happening to an American. More important than Republicans or Democrats, red or blue, black or white, is this notion that our nation is the greatest nation on earth because Lady Justice has a blindfold on. That means that Republicans are not hunted and Democrats are not protected. It means that we look at every single case based on the evidence. And in America, every single person is presumed innocent, not guilty. And what we've seen over the last several years is the weaponization of the Department of Justice against the former president. You don't have to be a Republican to see injustice and want to fix it. You don't have to be a Democrat to see injustice and want to fix it. You just...
Boy, can you answer the question? he going all over the world. Can your ass answer the damn question? Y'all, I'm going to play the rest of it, then I'm going to get Julianne. But, I mean, this is like a whole lot of nothing. First of all, I want to start, I'm an American. Well, shit, was somebody questioning your status like your party did Obama? All right, y'all, let me play. I can only stomach so much of this crap. So here's here's 60 more seconds.
I have to be an American and stand up for the right thing. I don't care whether you're on my party or not in my party. I don't care if you look like me or not. The one thing that makes America the city on the hill is confidence in our justice system. And today, what we see is a justice system where the scales are weighted. That seems to be the outcome of where we are today. As president of the United States, I would purge all of the injustices and impurities in our system so that every American can have confidence that they will be seen by the Lady of Justice with a blindfold on. That is what we need in this nation, not more politicizing of the issues.
Yeah. Will you reach out or have you reached out to the former President Trump?
Well, I was sitting here waiting to come on air, so this is the first time I've had an opportunity to have a conversation, and I certainly will continue to pray for our nation and continue to pray that justice prevails.
Senator Scott, thank you for your time tonight. Appreciate it.
He said he didn't even answer the second question. Julianne, go ahead.
No, he's incapable. I read the indictment. I don't know why. Well, I did read the indictment. Trump clearly took national security and he didn't pay attention, had papers in the bathroom, on the floor. You know, I mean, looks like somebody with ADD going through government documents. Not only that, I mean, first of all, Tim Scott, I don't even know why you pay that man any attention. He's an American. You know, he's an American. That's your answer to everything. He doesn't care what party you're in because he's an American. Know what he is a blankety blank, blank, blank fool. And every time he opens his mouth, he confirms the notion that he doesn't have enough sense. I don't know what he's running for, but he's certainly not running for president. He's running for secretary or something. Certainly not state, not housing, not. The indictment is very, very compelling, especially because of the inside information that exists in that indictment. You know that some of Trump's own people turned on him to get this information out. That's number one. Number two, I don't know what website I was on, but there's some website where his supporters were talking about lynching people, taking back over the government. January 6th, again, one of them said if you thought January 6th was bad, watch out. Well, hopefully this time law enforcement gets it and he won't have this opportunity to turn his followers into a bunch of rabid fools. But, you know, thirdly, this is very sad, not that Trump has been indicted, but that some people who've read the indictment, some Republicans who read it, still believe that this is political. It's not political. Hillary never took documents that she wasn't supposed to have. She was never subpoenaed. Biden has some old documents. Again, he was never subpoenaed. When they asked him, do you have anything? He went through it and he gave it back to him. This is just egregious and it's arrogant. I mean, he might not have even gotten caught if he hadn't said, see, I have this document. I'm not supposed to have it. I could have declassified it. I didn't, but I have it. Well, you can't look at it because it's secret. Well, why do you have it out and throw it about? This is the arrogance is just unspeakable. One of the Republican sites said he needs to learn how to shut his mouth. Tim Scott, Nikki Haley, a whole bunch of them need to learn how to shut their mouths. I just can't stop cracking up when I hear these people talking. It just is literally comedy, except what makes my stomach hurt.
The bottom line is they don't want to accept what is truth.
We have a press conference that just wrapped up near the scene of that I-95 fire and collapse. We went ahead right out to our reporter there on scene. Madeline Wright has been there tracking the very latest for us all morning long. So what did we learn in that press conference, Madeline?
Good morning, Jan. Yeah, we just got an update a couple seconds ago from the emergency management office as well as the Philadelphia Fire Department. What we learned is that this is going to be a long day for the fire department. They're still working to get this tanker fire under control. They've kind of backed away from actually calling it a tanker fire. They said it's a possible tanker truck that caught fire, but it was definitely a vehicle fire underneath I-95. And right now, I-95 is shut down in both directions between Academy Road and Bridge Street. What we learned in the press conference is that one of the biggest challenges of the fire department getting this fire under control is that the seat or the origin of the fire is buried underneath thousands of pounds of steel and concrete and other material. Because what happened was when the vehicle caught fire, I-95 North collapsed on top of it. And so when firefighters have been using these ladder trucks to pour water on it from the top, not all of that water is seeping to the bottom. And so for the last 2 hours, they've been working to fight this fire. I'm going to take a step out of the way so you can take a look at the scene here. This is the intersection of State Road and Cottman Avenue, which is the staging area for the police department and the fire department. Now there's also a federal response involved because the interstate is shut down and it's going to require heavy construction to rebuild the portion of the road that was collapsed. I want to pull up some video if I can showing Chopper 3, the damage from above. The northbound side has collapsed and the southbound side is questionable because it's buckled. The commute tomorrow is going to be a mess. This road is not going to be open for some time. There's damage that has to be assessed. It's going to be very difficult for people tomorrow, especially those who have to go to the northbound side of the highway in the Tacony area, which is where we are now. Locally, the roads around the highway are also shut down at this hour because the emergency response is still active. The two-block radius on the north and on the east and the westbound side of the highway is blocked off. There have been some explosions within the last hour. I counted about 13 or 14 booms that we heard. I saw a manhole cover flying into the air. We're told that that's a buildup of pressure from underground. There's also an environmental concern here. There's some fuel that leaked that they're worried could spill off into the Delaware River. The Coast Guard is involved trying to keep that situation under control. But the main thing for people to know right now at home is that the north and southbound side of I-95 are shut down in both directions between Academy Road and Bridge Street because of a vehicle that caught fire underneath the highway. And this part of the road will be shut down for some time. There are a lot of moving parts. A lot of different agencies are getting involved. There are hundreds of people who are involved in responding to this incident and dealing with the aftermath of this incident. This is right in the middle of an industrial area. There are homes and businesses. There are some abandoned warehouses as well. I'm looking right now at a citywide roofing company and a used car dealership. So people who need to go to these businesses are not going to be able to get in here because of the roads being shut down in the wake of this vehicle fire underneath I-95. It's still unclear from that press conference whether anybody was hurt. The vehicle that caught fire was presumably parked.
There in Radio Land, you are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 on your radio device, WRCT.org on your web browsing device, whatever the URL is for our station on TuneIn. I don't remember. Anyway, it's 7 o'clock. It's time for the radio calendar. Here are some things going on in our city. At the Harris Theater, you can catch Lynch Oz, a reinterpretation of The Wizard of Oz by way of David Lynch. Lynch Oz features six distinctive perspectives and narration by some of contemporary cinema's iconic voices. Movie runs now through June 15th. If you are in the mood for more David Lynch, they're also showing Mulholland Drive, David Lynch's ninth feature, widely considered the masterpiece of his late career despite its evolution from an aborted TV pilot. The movie takes its name from the storied Los Angeles Road and weaves its plot around the city's signature motion picture industry. Mulholland Drive is showing on June 14th and 15th. For more information about showtimes at the Harris Theater, which is at 809 Liberty Avenue in downtown Pittsburgh, go to trustarts.org. Drawing inspiration from Pittsburgh's history of miraculous moments, Eric Jones returns with his show Immaculate Deception, returns to Liberty Magic, that is. Don't take your eye off the ball, or the card, or the coin. You just might catch the Immaculate Deception. The show featuring Eric Jones is presented now until July 2nd. All performances are at 811 Liberty Avenue, a.k.a. Liberty Magic, in downtown Pittsburgh. For more information, again, trustarts.org. 820 Liberty presents Traveling While Black, a cinematic VR experience that immerses viewers in the long history of restriction of movement for Black Americans and the creation of safe spaces in our communities. The film transports viewers to historic Ben's Chili Bowl in Washington, D.C. Viewers share an intimate series of moments with several of Ben's patrons as they reflect on their experiences of restricted movement and racial relations in the U.S. The show is on display now through September 24th at 820 Liberty Avenue in downtown Pittsburgh. Again, for more information, trustarts.org. Enjoy Wrestling returns to Mr. Small's Theater in Millvale on Saturday, June 17th for Something to Write Home About. Featuring matches between Enjoy champion Edith Surreal and Sue Young, Enjoy tag team champions The Production and Bird Law, and much more. Tickets and more information are available at enjoy-wrestling.com. actually be talking with Kurt from Enjoy Wrestling on this very show at 8 o'clock. So if you are interested, stay tuned for more info about that whole thing. City Parks presents its summer cinema in the parks schedule, with movies shown outside in 11 parks throughout the city of Pittsburgh. Nearest to our radio station is at Schenley Plaza in Oakland and at Flagstaff Hill in Schenley Park, but a complete listing of cinema in the park locations is available at pittsburghpa.gov/events/cinema. I believe that movies don't actually start until July 1st. They start at Schenley Plaza on July 2nd when they're showing Puss in Boots: The Last Wish. So